Hello and welcome to Super Respectable. My name is Toshio Rahman, and with me is David Lewis. Hey, Dave.
Hey Tosh, how's it going?
I'm okay, considering. How are you?
I'm all right, considering. It's
Yeah.
actually, everything is wonderful. Restrictions have been lifted, the sun is shining, all is well.
No, no restrictions at all in the Netherlands, or restricted restrictions, or what's the deal?
Yeah, so it's gone down for Dutch standards. We're still like top two or three worst in Europe for COVID, but that's good enough for them. No longer number one. And so yeah, since like June, the bars and restaurants and that sort of thing are open until 10 p.m.
Nice.
and museums have opened. I mean, things are mostly open, but like with the usual like new normal restrictions. So that's nice.
Yeah, and I don't know if you heard or not, but I heard just a couple minutes ago that Canada will be removing some of the quarantine restrictions for Canadian citizens and PRs who have been vaccinated coming into the country. So
Oh,
I think
that is very
the
good news.
no more hotels or minimal hotels, and no more 14-day quarantines and stuff. So that's great. I know a lot of people like yourself couldn't come back to the country unless you did this. So yeah, I'm happy.
Well, I'm very excited because it's been coming up to 2 years without being in Canada and seeing family. So, yeah, once I'm fully vaccinated, I'll be looking to book
Yeah, we were
a
just
visit back.
we were talking pre-show that I've had one vaccine. You're having both soon. I think our second one will probably be around the same time, but at least the ball has started pretty much on getting vaccinated.
Yeah, I mean, at least in the developed rich world, it seems like it's going well, but unfortunately, there's vaccine poverty as well, and
I know.
hopefully, the rich countries will share the vaccine and do a
You
military style operation to jab everybody.
I still think they should put it in the water like fluoride, but I don't know
Yeah,
if that's
I don't think it
possible.
works like that, but yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm not a scientist. But what, do you here's a question for you. So like I remember reading that a lot of these companies who are doing the vaccines are really not making any money on any of this stuff. They're just doing it at the basic level. Do you think that's true, or do you think that's a load of crap? Like, do you think these companies, there must be some marginal profits there?
Yeah, well, I guess for huge companies like Pfizer and AstraZeneca, it's kind of marginally improved things for them because they have such a like diversified portfolio. It certainly hasn't hurt, but like a company like Moderna, which I was saying earlier, it's their only product as far as I'm aware,
That's
and
so
so
weird, huh?
that's I think they're publicly listed. I don't even know that, so that's probably transformed the company. And are there any other ones that I'm missing? These smaller companies?
There was AstraZeneca, Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson and Johnson. I don't know what happened with their vaccine.
Yeah.
They were talking, and there's a couple of the like the Russian and Chinese, like Sino something out of
Those are like
China.
state operated things,
Yeah, that's
so
like
that.
propaganda vaccine. I don't want any of that stuff. But you make a really good point. I mean, I know that in some of the undeveloped world, vaccine rollouts are much slower and people are buying them. And then I've heard of corruption cases and people selling fake vaccines or this and that. So, yeah, I mean, I think individually we might be okay, but globally there's a lot of problems happening. And COVID cases are still rampant in many countries around the world.
Yeah, and I saw like in the UK, even where there's lots of people vaccinated, they've had quite a big outbreak of the
India variant.
Delta.
Oh, the Delta variant.
There's new terminology.
There's so many different
The
variants,
Indian
man.
variant.
These variants. Oh, we should get Marcus back on the podcast since he can talk to us about variants, because I'm really interested in that. And I don't really fully. I know he told me that. I told us that like this vaccine is not the vaccine. This virus is always mutating and getting stronger, as most viruses do. But there's all these different ones coming up. People talking about, and it's like. It's like I don't know. It's I hope hopefully our vaccines cover us from all variants.
I hope so too.
And life is good otherwise. Your summer is going well. Sun is out, like you said. New haircut, new
Work,
fashion.
working, working on my tan.
Working on your tan.
Yeah, for all the
Life.
podcast listeners out there, it's
Yeah.
important.
What's the plan for the summer? Like, are you guys going to stick around the Netherlands, or you might travel, you said, if you get the vaccine?
Yeah, we assuming all is well with the vaccinations, we'll wait a week or two,
Yeah.
and follow all the protocols, and then likely go to Italy to see family there.
Yeah.
And I'd like to go to the UK. So, yeah, probably like catching up on all the carbon emissions I did in the midst last year,
Yeah.
and trying to burn up the atmosphere a bit more.
You can save it all up and just implement it this year. Yeah, on a regular day, if there wasn't COVID, could you make it from the Netherlands to the UK or Italy in like a couple hours? Like it's pretty
Yeah.
much green lights everywhere. Yeah.
In a normal time, like normal travel, yeah, it's
Like how quick could you get to London or to Rome from where you are? Say there was no problems.
well, I the great thing and sad thing was before the pandemic, they had just opened up a Eurostar route from Rotterdam and Amsterdam into London.
Yeah.
And you know, like when you travel by plane, the big like add-on to the journey, in some respects, is get to the airport, go through security, wait for your flight, board the flight, and then of
Yeah.
course there's the journey. But those things, like on either end, add on quite a bit of time as well.
Yeah.
Whereas when you go by train, you're just like hop on and off you go.
It takes the channel or the.
Yeah, so it would take the channel. So obviously, like the journey is longer by train than flying, but
It's convenient.
overall,
Yeah.
it's door to door. Like you're taken into the center of London and you're leaving from the center of Rotterdam versus like the travel to,
Of
you know,
course.
in
Yeah.
London, they're all outlying areas. So
And
it's a sensible thing. I might do that.
like how long of a journey is that on the train, and how much would it cost, just roughly?
I think from here to London, it could be about 4.5 hours,
That's fine.
close
That's
to
too.
5, which is okay. And, you know, around 100 euros.
Yeah, because by the way, if you look 100 euros, I mean you can't beat that price. But if you look at 4 or 5 hours, I bet you if you took a plane, it would pretty much be near that with
It
all the
would be
waiting and the
close to the
travel.
same, right?
Yeah, and but can like when you fly into London, it's like if you're at Gatwick or Stansted or like Heathrow, that's like an hour into the city. You know what I mean? And so like if you're going downtown to downtown, and like it's probably like one of the major terminals and stuff, that's fantastic, right? And the Euro and it's nice, like it's
And it's
comfortable, right?
expensive to get into like the center of London, because it's another
Totally.
trap. You like fly into these places and you got to spend another like £40 to get into central London, which takes time. So yeah,
Yeah.
I'm all in favor of Eurostar when it's possible. But you know, going to Italy, obviously it's more of a challenge. We have taken night trains before. Maybe we can do some episodes on train journeys, but
Yeah.
yeah, night train's actually very cool. It seems a bit freaky to the uninitiated, but I really enjoyed it. And they've opened up a few more like night trains from Amsterdam. They don't quite reach Italy yet, but you know, you can kind of crisscross Europe and get there if you want.
Yeah.
Which is a great thing about living in Europe. Like
The best.
you're not far from all these awesome locations, and
The best. I think
the best.
I think if you had to list the best advantage of Europe, it's just that it's well connected to the rest of Asia, Africa, the Middle East, Europe, and like you can just go from France to London in the afternoon, right? Have lunch and then come back if you wanted to.
Absolutely. In the pre-corona globalized world.
Yeah. Shall we start? My topic's actually somewhat related to a mini scale, but interestingly there. But I'll go. It's my week.
Sure, please
Yeah.
go ahead.
So this is something actually that came to my brain a couple of weeks ago. So I had it listed on my like to-do list. So when it was my week, I was going to present it. But I wanted to talk about some of the miniature worlds of like model trains and little cities around the world. I don't know if
Okay.
that's something you found interesting or not, but I've always loved that kind of stuff. And not building them, but like just kind of experiencing them. So it's sort of like Lilliput in the Gulliver's Travels, which is the small town where Gulliver wakes up and he's bigger than everyone else. So it's sort of like that, but pretty much there are a number of attractions around the world, which are miniature worlds, which are displays of miniature buildings and models. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like then Amsterdam actually is famous for one, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, The Hague. But
The Madeira Dam.
Oh, you know it. That's cool.
I love that stuff, actually. Yeah.
Oh,
Okay. I'm glad it's the same thing, because I was wondering where you're going, but I love that stuff. It makes me feel powerful, crushing all the people below.
I know it's When I think of it, I think it's kind of targeted towards young people. But honestly, as a 36-year-old male or 35-year-old, I still think it's amazing and fascinating. I could spend days in these places. But we're talking about people who build little towns, little miniature figures. There's cars moving, planes flying, boats going, and these are massive. And so it's actually quite interesting, is because historically these things have been happening since the 19th century, but only in the 1930s and 50s did it start to become tourist attractions. And interestingly enough, before the current system of miniature worlds, it used to be kind of more model villages where you could actually walk through little towns. So they're a little bit bigger than what we see now, and you could interact, and there's a larger scale. But only in the mid to late 20th century did they kind of go smaller. And so now we're not really part of the experience. We're more like tourists looking into it. But it's pretty cool stuff. Like if you go online, you can see that a lot of people have taken this on as personal hobbies, as businesses, and it's really intricate and detailed. So you mentioned the Maduro Dam in The Hague, in the Netherlands. You've been?
Yeah, it's great.
Is it?
And typical of the Dutch, there's even a red light district for the children to look at and interact with.
So is it 100% realistic to the actual part? Like, is it real buildings and stuff, or is it kind of more fictitious?
Well, it basically tries to condense the entire country into a model village, which is quite cool. You walk around it. You can interact with some aspects to it. So there's like the airport, there's the canals of Amsterdam, there's the wind mills and wind turbines and all the rest of it. So yeah, it's pretty impressive. I love it.
It's very cool. I will definitely post links and videos and pictures to what we're talking about so you can get a visual so you can really appreciate it. But yeah, man, I love it too. There's one in Victoria, which is like the capital of the province I live in. And so every time I go to Victoria, I try to go there, even though it's old and stuff, but I just really like it. There's one in Malaysia. I went to Legoland and they had one made out of Lego for all the little like big exhibits. There's one in do you know what the oldest one in the world is?
I do not.
It's called the Beaconscott Model Village in Beaconsfield, Buckinghamshire, England. It was built in 1929. So it's more of the older model village system, but it is the oldest park, quote unquote, in the world. There's ones in Australia, Switzerland, Belgium, Japan. China has something called Window of the World, and it's kind of crazy. It's 148 acres. So just to put that in perspective, it's huge. And they have replicas of like international sites, and their Eiffel Tower is a 1-to-1 ratio of the real Eiffel Tower. Isn't that crazy?
That's not a model village anymore. They're just
It's like a
making
town.
a town.
Some of the other things around are smaller, but like it's not a miniature village anymore, miniature world. It's like a half world, but it's crazy to think that they can do that. I also like, I don't know if you've ever done this. If you've ever gone to a city or and they have like a model of the city, like so it doesn't have, it's not like a whole miniature village or whatnot, but it's got like a, I went to one in Kuala Lumpur at the tourist center and they had the whole city built out and they had like lights and railways and stuff like that. So it was more for like tourism purposes, but it was really cool, man. Like really cool. I've seen ones on YouTube where people have not built cities but have built train tracks in their backyards. And the trains actually go around the whole backyard. And they have little like villages and towns and stops. And like, that's commitment, man. That's time and dedication.
One of our guests, I think their parents worked on one in their basement, and it was very impressive to see. And I was always paranoid I was going to somehow knock the train off track or destroy something. Because it was hours and hours and hours of work.
The dedication that goes into these things, and it's like a real hobby because people who do the trains specifically, they build these trains and the tracks and the environment, and then there's an electrical aspect to it. I never did it, and I'm not really interested in building one. I'm interested in watching other people do it and like experiencing it. But it's really cool. I don't know what it is about it, but it's maybe something like there's like a childlike element to it. There's the idea that you're all powerful and you're like this, you're ruling this little town. But it's
I think
amazing,
it's for
isn't
like the engineer in all of us who like the idea of trying to see how things are constructed and putting it all together.
Yeah, it's so cool. So I know there's a bunch of them around the world, but there's one in specific I wanted to talk about. I've never been, but you might have gone. Have you been to the one in Hamburg called Miniatur Wonderland?
Nine.
Nine. Okay, it is the largest of its kind. What it is it's a mini world attraction. It's mostly the foundation is it's a train system, but they've built pretty much live cities based on real cities around it. It has have had it's had and it's like a business now. It's the biggest tourist attraction in Hamburg, apparently. They have these huge factory buildings that they've taken over and they keep expanding over and over again. And as of 2016, I know my data is a little old, there's been over 500,000 working hours put into it. And it's crazy. So it has 51,000 feet of track, nine sections as of October 2016, and they're expanding. So it includes this fake German town called Harz. It's not real, but it's a fictitious city. But they also have the Alps, Austria, Hamburg, parts of America, Scandinavia, Switzerland. An airport which is based off the Hamburg airport. It's so cool, Dave. You should Google this at one point. They have so it's called Miniatur Wonderland. Miniatur Wonderland. Yeah, you got it. Okay.
Wunderland.
Wonderland. They have Las Vegas, they have the Wild West, they have a Johnson Spenedy, Kennedy Space Center. 3 years ago, Venice, their section on Venice was opened. And it took about 35,000 hours.
Oh, wow.
And
I'm looking at pictures now. It's incredible.
it's so cool.
They have the Vatican.
They have the Vatican there. They have this cool little Italian section, which took 4 years because it was so realistic, and it took 4 million euros to build. That's crazy, huh?
4 million.
So they're working right now on Central America, the Caribbean, Asia, parts of England, Africa, and the Netherlands, which is for you, Dave. So there it's pretty cool. But so let me name a couple facts and then I'll tell you something really cool about it. So as of the last data that was there, because it's a train system mostly, there's over 13 kilometers of track installation in this place. They use materials such as steel, wood, and plaster. Right now there's 1,300 trains that operate with over 10,000 carriages. We're not talking about real trains, we're talking about model trains, man. This Scandinavia section has over 30,000 liters of water because it's got a real little ocean thing going, and they're trying to work on getting the boats to move automatically. Right now it's manual, but eventually they want to get to a system where these boats will actually just like be on tracks and travel along. And so 30,000 liters of water, people, is it's a lot of water. it's a ton of water. And so they also have 100,000 moving vehicles, 500,000 lights, 1.3 million trees, and 400,000 human figurines. And 250 of those vehicles are computer controlled. And the cool thing about this is that because they're computer controlled, they don't always do the same things. They can be programmed to do different routes and different things. So it's pretty cool, man. They even have like some of their cities have little firefighters that'll go out and put out little
Yeah, I saw
fires and
that.
stuff like that. It's really cool. The highest point of all of this is the Alps, which is 6 meters high, which is crazy high, like it's a mountain. So it's very cool. And the whole place actually operates on a 15-minute daylight nighttime cycle. So every 15 minutes the sun comes up, and then after 15 minutes the lights
That's
go down.
insane.
It's really cool. So it's like I said, Hamburg's most popular attraction. Over 1 million people go a year. They actually, this is how cool it is. Google has a street view of the actual place. Like, I'm not talking about street view from above of this. You can actually
You
go
can
and
go
do
inside and walk
Google,
around.
and you can actually go around miniature world, which is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, I'm doing it now.
Okay, cool. So it's really interesting. They had a little funny video where they had made a little Google, those Google camera cars or whatever, and they kind of put it through its town. So it's very cool. So this
It
is
doesn't look very COVID friendly in this street view. There's lots of
a
people
yeah.
and
Can you imagine going back and having to put masks on like 400,000 people? Paint
Oh,
masks.
I'm in the airport now. Yeah, this is an insane scale. I have never heard of this in my life.
It's
I've canceled my Italy plans. I will now be going to Hamburg.
So, Dave, like I said, this is a business, right? So there's like engineers, there's tech people, there's this, that. So all of this is actually, but it's computerized and it's monitored from a control room. Like there's like, in the movies when like there's people sitting and there's like 1,000 TV. So there's 40 computers that are operating all this stuff, 260 staff. People are working full time on this thing to make sure things are operating. Like pretty much they're controlling a little village, a little town that's happening. So very cool. There's a cool little video which I'll send and I'll post, which is sort of like their promotional video, and it kind of goes through all the different towns and what's happening. But the detail on this stuff is amazing, eh? Like it's unbelievable. A lot of it is based on real life, so they'll actually go when they did the Italy section or the Venice section. They actually went to Venice to take like pictures and snapshots and try to make it as realistic as possible. So like, that's
What
commitment,
a
man.
job. I'm
I think it would be fun, don't you?
going to see if they have any
Openings?
jobs going.
Any
I'll check
job?
out their career
Any
section.
job openings? So some cool features other than the ones I told you. So like I said, most of their cities are based on real places, but they have two places which are fictitious, and one is a fantasy town called, I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher my German, but Knuffingen. It's 120 square meters. It's a population of 6,000 people. It's got 100 moving cars, a number of fire engines. Like I said, there's a fire every 15 minutes, so they go put it out for entertainment purposes. It's pretty cool. The US section has an interstate highway, and it's got a dynamic traffic control system. So it controls, there's different speeds like the cars will go at. Isn't that cool?
Is Canada featured?
Unfortunately not, but I think we should make a special request. I think what would you want in the Canada section?
Could have a hockey rink, maybe.
Yeah. The
You could
Rocky
do the
Mountains.
Rockies, but then like the Alps versus the Rockies, it'd be like the Alps, it's more relatable.
Yeah.
You could do like an outdoor forest thing with bears. Everyone associates Canada with bears
Yeah.
and stuff like that.
Yeah, you just named all the stereotypical
Well, that's what it's meant to be there, right?
things. Yeah, that's true. So one of the cool things I learned about it is that they're really trying to make it not just like a normal, like standard, like default place. They're really trying to change it, modernize it. So they have this cool like technology that allows things to change. So like Volkspark Stadium in Germany from Volkswagen, I think it's a soccer team plays there or something, but they're the scoreboard changes with different numbers each time. So they programmed it so it like it's different. The gas station prices change to reflect the real gas prices in Germany.
They thought of everything.
And then I think you said the, some places you go to in the world, you can kind of push buttons and things happen. I don't know if you've ever been to one of those places, but they're called push buttons, and there's over 200 of them at this place. And so if you push one button, the train in a mine starts. If you push another, the wind turbines start to turn. If you push another button, the soccer ball goes into the football net at the stadium. Another one, the space shuttle takes off. The funny one is if you push it, Pinocchio's nose will grow. So it allows you to kind of be part of these stimulations and stuff. So simulations. So it's interesting, man. Like I think it's really, really cool, like how they built it. But the creme de la creme, the thing that puts it at the top, other than a number of awards, is the airport. So it took 6 years. I think you just said you saw a picture of it. You should. It's unbelievable. It took 6 years of planning and construction, and it's built off the Hamburg airport, even though it's supposed to be in this fictitious town. So it opened about 10 years back, and there are fire engines that are there. There's four airfield fire engines. There's 14 meter runways. There's aircrafts of ships from Boeing to Airbuses to UPS deliveries to British Airways to the Concorde to the Millennium Falcon as well, just as a little joke
No.
there. And there's over 40 buses. But the coolest thing is, Dave, so the way they built it is there's an invisible rod in the sky. So the planes actually take off. They can turn a little bit. And then what they do is they disappear into the back of the wall. So like you see as they're gone, and then they'll come back in the landing.
Oh, there's one landing in the street view. That's amazing.
Isn't that cool? And these vehicles and these planes, so they can not only take off, tilt, land, but they also, like after they land, they'll go into like into a hangar to get refueled, quote unquote, to lo load and unload their stuff, and then they'll even park in different positions. I'm assuming that it's just some type of programming, right? So like that's why you can get these ships, these planes to do different things. But it's really cool, like how they can do that. And like, if you look at, sorry, some of the details of the planes, they look like complete replicas of real planes, but of course on a miniature scale.
Do you think they get sponsorship from Emirates Airlines to be featured there, and that's a way to boost their revenues? Because this
Oh.
thing, I mean, if it's a big tourist attraction, it makes money.
Yeah.
But like, you got to think of all angles, right? As business students, we have to think about revenue generation opportunities.
Yeah,
I'm seeing that.
No, wow. For sure. I think other than, I mean, you can. I mean, it would be great for any of these like airplanes and these carriers to have their names and there, and of course they're there. But like a million people, I'm assuming entrance is, you know, like the fee for admission is probably.
Let's see the ticket cheap. Price.
What's the ticket price, right? Oh, let
me just close yeah.
Sorry. And so I'm sure they're making profit. They're making good money. If a million people a year are going plus the ticket price, right? My guess, what's your guess before you see? In euro,
do you know?
I don't. No, I'm gonna say 25 euros.
I think you're about right.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll go a bit higher. I'll say 30.
Okay.
Let's see. Tickets. Uh-huh. This isn't working.
Uh-oh.
It's all sold out. Oh no, you can go for 20 euros, I think. Oh,
So that's 20 million euros a year just from income. Then you have your expenses and this and that. But you're right, man. You can do some sponsorships in there and then like really just up the price. I mean, people would love, you know, it'd be cool. This is our MBA business minds. If companies wanted their names to be in like the different places or promotional things, so you could be like, oh, look, Coca-Cola or this and that. You could pay to be promoted, like to have advertising inside the park.
I think that's a great thing because everyone's going there to look at the park and yeah, eyeballs yeah. is good for business. it sounds like a fun job, but like, I just imagine people who do engineering or the types of things that you need this park to do.
Yeah.
Can go work at a startup and potentially make tons of money. So these I imagine are just really interested in geeking out on the coolness. Totally. I think that has to be it.
I think, you know, sometimes you have a hobby that turns into a job. This is definitely that. Like if you were a kid or you grew up like doing this kind of stuff, model planes, model trains, like stuff like that. And you like somehow you've converted it over to a time of employment. That's like golden. Cause like you have the engineers who kind of figure out how it works. You have the artists who design everything. Then you have kind of the business management people who kind of see how they can promote it, the marketing people, but it's like a fun job, right? So like, I don't know in your mind how you think. I sometimes look around the world, I'm like, oh, that's a really fun job. Like, you know, some people have really dull jobs and that's cool too. Like that's life. But like sometimes people have jobs that they really enjoy, and this would definitely be something that's just fun, right? And I think most people would enjoy it.
I think that, you know, when you're younger and in like, I don't know when it starts, but like middle school to high school, they start warning you that you have to work eventually.
Yeah.
And you have like these guidance counselors and career counselors. And they never tell you anything about this kind of stuff. Like they are like, you could go work in an office, you yeah. could go, you know, be a pilot, all these like typical things that you know anyways as a child. They should spend most of their time like inspiring people and be like, look at this place in Hamburg.
Yeah.
You could do this. Look at this place in so-and-so. These are all like, options for you.
I feel like for the people who work there, it's probably a really like fun, stress-free environment, right? Like it's not overcomplicated where it's like my job is to come and build new environments and then I leave it. You know what I mean? Like it's not like a complicated business thing. I mean, of course there's the business side to it, but like people's jobs are to create different towns and then make sure it's authentic and that yeah. trains run through it and, you know, cars move. Like it's cool.
I think this is like crying out for a reality show. I would watch like the behind the scenes 100%. Of this place and like the, how the tourists mess it up and like there's crisis management on site. And I think this is something I would watch.
Yeah, there's a fire in Vienna. Sweet, send the ambulance. Send the thing.
Yeah, send the real ambulance.
It's really cool. I was watching this little video, a little clip of like the control room. And like, it's all computerized. So you'll see how like the different like algorithms playing out and what it's doing to the machines. But people are like sitting there watching to make sure like things are operating. And I think the coolest thing would be is of course, this is all like a fictitious place and it's kind of like duplicate. But like that idea of trying to get boats to move automatically, adding more water, adding more realistic features, all that stuff would be cool. Cause I think there's a lot of room for development, right? You wanna try to go more authentic. You wanna try to imagine new things, add more towns. Like and like expand train lines. It's almost like doing the real thing, but on a just a on a smaller scale, right? And with less headache.
Yeah, maybe we'll find someone to interview who can explain the nuances of, you know, engineering miniature things versus real life huge
yeah,
things.
Yeah, that's a great job.
What are the practicalities of that? I did see like a TV series ages ago, which was like behind the scenes of how roller coasters and theme parks work.
Yeah, those are cool.
And I never even thought about it. I just like go in, went on it, and left. I'm like, I didn't think about like someone had to design this, and you have to like think about how it can be usable and not
Safety, yeah.
like, remove someone's ankle and their foot.
Have you ever seen those reports when they're like, oh, the roller coaster stopped halfway through on like the worst place possible and people are sitting there and like,
Worst nightmare.
they had to like, oh, I mean, the good thing is that in miniature world, you never are putting people's safety in jeopardy because like the roller coaster is one thousandth the size of a real one, right? So
But maybe
like,
like you have to think about the safety risk of like what if Junior like pokes at one of the things
totally,
and it's
totally.
sharp.
Some of the coolest ones I've been to are not only like, of course, it's cool when you're like based on a real place and you'd be like, oh, that's like Canada or that's like the America. I've been there. It's real. But like ones that are based on movies, I've seen little ones based on Star Wars background, like Star Wars locations. And those are really cool too, because you're like, oh, that's like the Millennium Falcon or the Death Star. And like, it's cool that other people have like similar interests as you and like they can kind of like find a way to formulate it. And so, yeah, like one of the things I wonder is like, how much do you think utilities cost in places like this, like electricity, lighting, like water, gas, like
Huge.
it must be crazy expensive, right?
Yeah, I would imagine this the operating cost of this place would be quite high. And like, do they ever actually have to switch the whole thing off? And
Oh
what
my
does
God.
that involve with starting it back up again? Do they all
Main.
just like magically keep going?
I think if this was 50 to 100 years back, or 50 years back even, if you stop it and start it up again and nothing worked, you'd have to like really figure out where the problem was. Is it in Austria? Is it at the Alps? Is it in Las Vegas? But now, since things are computerized, I think it makes life a little bit easier, right? Like I think the computer will be like, oh, the Wild West section has like a
I'll
electrical
live in
shortage or
Texas,
in
yeah.
Texas and stuff like that. So at least that's really cool, and they can incorporate like technology into it. And it's really interesting, the history, the reason this happened was because a gentleman named Frederick Brown, who's like the co-founder, he was in Zurich in 2000, and he was in a model train store. And he's like, he thought like, hey, I wonder like what the world's largest model train railroad is. Like, maybe I can go for that. So when he got back to Germany, he started Googling like miniature worlds and this and that. And not Google, but like, what, Alta Vista or whatever it was in 2000. And he found that some other people were also researching this kind of topic and wanted things like this. So he was able to get some funding with his co-partner and start this. And then within 2 years, he built the largest model railway in Europe. And then in 2015, he got the Guinness record for the world's largest railway system when he added Switzerland and Italy to the track between the two. So like right now, there's about 15,715 meters of track, which corresponds to about 1,367 kilometers in real length if you compared it. So it's definitely the world's largest scale layout in the world, and they've gotten the Guinness record for it too. So it's cool that the world has acknowledged it, and it's cool that I think that not only you and I share this interest, but the fact that a million people go to places like this definitely means there's other people out there that find it very cool too.
So that's amazing. This guy, out of nothing, created the biggest tourist attraction in Hamburg.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great thing. I mean, yeah, as a kid, I'm just thinking like near my grandparents' village in England, there was a model village, and I always like demanded to go there. I was like, this is my favorite
Yeah.
place. And I'm not sure if it's still around. I'll have to look it up. But that was always fascinating to me, this whole world. And to know that there's this gigantic one relatively close by means I'll have to pay it a visit post corona.
I mean, if I go to any city in the world and I find out there's something similar, it's definitely on like my top things to do. Like, I don't need to go to
But
anywhere
like,
else.
what do you think about it? So like sometimes the most visited thing in a city is often kind of crap and very kitschy. Like I think in London, it's not the obvious places, but it's the Wax Museum, Madame Tussauds. I'm pretty sure that's like the most visited thing. And I've never been in my life, and I don't think I have a desire to. So
Never.
most of the time, you look at these like TripAdvisor things, and you think, these aren't so good. But this is actually one thing where I would make an exception.
So what I do is when I travel, it really depends on multiple factors, right? If I'm traveling with others or by myself or whatnot. So I know what I'm interested in and I'm not, right? And like for me, a good coffee place is really important. Like I like to see that could make and break it. I try to stay away from like major tourist attractions because I know just generally like it won't be as great as I think it will be. Like if I went to Egypt, like I wouldn't go to the pyramids.
You wouldn't go to the pyramids.
I would, but like I wouldn't be do the typical like wait in line in the middle of like heat for these. Like I would try to see if I can go at an off time or if I could go in a smaller group or get a private tour or whatever. But like I try to just go for things that interest me, right? So if I was going to go to Hamburg and this thing came up, I'd definitely be like, not. I know it's counteractive in the sense that it's the biggest tourist attraction, but it's something I like. So I try to do things that I like and I know I'll enjoy. And I tend to take it slow, man. Like when I was young, I used to visit a lot of things in one day, but now it's just like I take it slow and steady. Like slow and steady wins the race is for me. And because I feel like when people travel, it's like a checklist. They're trying to get stuff done, but it should be enjoyable. It's a holiday, you know what I mean? Like take it easy sometimes and
Yeah,
stay in the
it
hotel,
was like,
sleep in, have a brunch. Like, you know what I mean? You can get things done. I like to
Otherwise,
go
you're
for
not relaxing.
walks.
You're on holiday for a reason. You shouldn't be running around stressing yourself out. I
My
think like with coronavirus now, you know, the whole city break, like people flying all over to these little things is more or less over. I'm sure people are going to try it again once the world goes back to normal. But I think it's kind of good in a way. People like maybe people reset and think about where they should really spend their
Yeah.
time, and when they go there, spend a huge chunk of time and make it worth your while and actually like be a traveler and not a tourist.
I think also, yeah, definitely. One thing I've done recently in recent years, which I would suggest to anyone traveling, is if you get to a city, do the hop on, hop off bus. I find that to be really cool because, like, I know it's really like, I know some cities are kind of overpriced, but it's a good way to get the lay of the land, you know? So I've done it in a couple cities, and you buy a 2-day pass or 1-day pass, and you can sit on the top, and you at least the first time, I just go around the city to get like a visual, and then the second time, I'll be like, I'll stop where I want to stop. I did in London, and it was a lot of fun. I actually just sat on the bus. I didn't really do anything else. I just, and then, yeah, man. I mean, it also depends too, right? Like, I find that some places. Is when you travel, maybe there isn't really anything like you want to do other than just kind of explore, right? And just walk around and just like the Netherlands, I think would be really nice just to walk, right? You know, like over the canals and like in the cafes and etc. But yeah, I take it easy. I don't know.
Yeah.
What's your plan when you go to a new city or when you go somewhere to travel? Like, how do you approach it?
Well, yeah, I'm very much someone who I think we're aligned as usual. Good coffee is a priority.
It's
It's
the
gotta
most
be
important.
it's gotta be hipster worthy. It's gotta have good hipster credentials. Yeah, I kind of just see like where are the good neighborhoods, where are the like there are interesting things to like walk around and spend time in, and where are the like annoying tourist centers that I would try and avoid. Because like if you go to Amsterdam, we went a couple weeks ago, and you know, even now, like the center, like straight from the train station, isn't that great. It's still like tourist central. But like once you just move around a little bit and spread your wings, you start seeing like the Amsterdam you should see and stuff like that. And so like I think the Netherlands is a great spot. Like if most people when they're traveling here and coming to Europe, they want to do the like go see Amsterdam, go to Rome, go to like the big
The
cities,
big
and
ones,
like
yeah.
they are kind of like ticking a box. And to some extent it's understandable because like in North America, you only get like 2 or 3 weeks of holiday a year, and
Totally.
then so they just go and like zoom around,
Maximize time, yeah.
max it all out. But like I think there's also a lot of value to a
Take a
different
beat.
approach. Well, like
Relax, yeah.
if you're gonna do a 2 week holiday, just do 2 weeks in one country in 1 year,
Agreed.
2 weeks in one country the following year, and then really get to know the place.
Yeah.
Like you don't need to rush. There'll
No
be
rush.
time. There'll be time. Because The Hague is a wonderful place. There is a model village here
Yeah.
and a miniature Netherlands. So you can say you've seen the whole country if you just
There you
come to The
go.
Hague
That should be
and
their
there's the
marketing.
Netherlands.
I agree with you. Like, I think there's a rush for people to like check things off and try to do as much as they can. But sometimes, like, if you go to a country and just do a section of the country this time and then a section of the next time, and it's just like you might enjoy it a little bit more. And just like, I mean, at the end of the day, vacations are for rest and relaxation, right? So maybe you're one of those people that rest and relax by just going to 1,000 museums and like trying to do this and that. But you know, I like to, like, for me, it's like I said, I like to get a good cup of coffee in the morning, you know, sit down with the family and see what we want to do. And just take it. Look, I think if you have kids, it's probably just like one activity a day, depending on the age of the kids, and then
Leave
like a lot of
the
food and
house, then come
stuff,
back.
and then come back. But yeah, I mean, today's maybe a beach day. Tomorrow's maybe just like, you know, having lunch outside and going for a walk. I like to, but on any city, if there's like a museum And if it's free, I really love those ones.
That's what the London is great for. You just walk into these great museums.
Just walk in. And then, like, I'm not a huge, huge foodie, but like, if I Google and I find out there's like a really good restaurant or somewhere that's like, I should definitely, like, I'll miss out if I don't do it. I'll definitely check that out. But yeah, it takes many factors go into consideration. But if I were to go to Hamburg, I would definitely spend the day at this place. Like that, like, this would definitely be like my 20 euros or whatever it is. I'm going to maximize that to the
Well
whole.
worth it.
Well worth it because it's so cool. Like, I mean, just the idea and the implementation, the detail, just to make sure how things go. And then, like, the coolest in these places is like, if you've ever actually been to that real place and you can see it reflected in the miniature world, you'd be like, oh yeah, I was there. And there's a cool little restaurant and the cool little thing. And it's sort of like the movies, in like movies when they make sets or they make like backgrounds and stuff like that, they're kind of making worlds. It's cool like that.
Have you seen on that subject, like some of those behind the scenes for things like E.T. and Star Wars in the 70s and 80s? Like they were doing this sort of thing. And so possibly like these you should never discourage your children from hobbies, because you could be like, oh, well, that's a waste of time. What do you do
No
that
way.
for? And then you never know, they're working on like a Star Wars production 20 years.
I think it's
So yeah, for sure.
no, I was just gonna say, like, if my kid decides to do this as a hobby, I definitely have to do it with him. Not only just because like it could lead to a job, but it's fun and it's like a good bonding experience and it takes time. But I was gonna say that, yeah, Star Wars, E.T. back in the day did this, but now they like make real life cities for some of these movies, you know what I mean? And then they destroy them afterwards. I know, remember we had the Titanic episode a couple episodes back. They built pretty much an outer shell for a Titanic, like for the movie. For Batman, the Christopher Nolan Batman, they built like Gotham City, like in a huge warehouse or something. In New Zealand, for Lord of the Rings, there's like huge sets like that are visiting sites. There's Harry Potter in the UK, so it's like functioning worlds, you know?
Yeah, when I was in Budapest, they filmed a lot of movies and TV shows there. And one day when I was going to work, it was kind of strange, because usually when they do these kind of shoots, they go super early in the morning
Yeah,
because
not
there's
to
not
bother
much people
people.
walking around, not much activity. And or late at night for something that's like a Gotham City type of thing. But this one, it was bizarre, because it was like, I think they wanted to capture the hustle and bustle, and they didn't warn anybody. I left my house right around the corner, and I was like, I thought I had a bad dream or I was confused or something, because they had converted my neighborhood into London overnight. And there was, they had put like the red phone booth, mailboxes, all those characteristic things that you'd see in the UK. Like they turned like my local bar into like a pub kind of look. And I had to like, I was super late for work because I was just totally distracted. I was just walking around until. So it's just incredible what they can do now,
Crazy, right?
just to take Eastern European, Central European cities and convert them and
We
create Titanics and huge
we
scales.
I live in Vancouver, as you know, which is like a very major center for film in Canada. And so, like, at any given time, you might see like a street being used for like a TV show or a movie. So, I've seen like NYPD cars for New York police and American mailboxes, and like, it's just strange and weird. And I guess it's on a larger scale, but it's cool. It's similar to miniature world, in that it's just not miniature. Like, it's just a fake
But
world.
you know what I do in those situations? Because like I know that when there's movies that are made in Canada very frequently, it's like Vancouver and Montreal sometimes. I'll like go on the Wikipedia page of the movie, and I'll try and when I'm watching the movie to like pick out little mistakes or gaps of things that are like distinctly Canadian, to see if they've missed anything. So that's kind of a fun little
But
thing to do.
giving speaking of your hometown of Ottawa, I watched a movie with my wife a couple months back, and it was supposed to be some American city, but it was Ottawa. And
No.
yeah, I'll send you the movie name. And it's a really crap movie. It's like a Hallmark movie on Netflix. But it was Ottawa, and I remember, like, oh, that's the market, and that's like this. There's a couple places I didn't pick up on. Maybe you'll know where it is. But yeah, there's like a few, when you see your hometown or when you see a town that you've lived in a movie, you'll be like, hey, that's so and so, or hey, that's, yeah,
Yeah.
it's
And
cool.
so it's weird because it's great in a way because you can relate to it, but it also takes away like the filmmaker's idea of it's somewhere distant and somewhere you take your mind away from your day-to-day life. So like well, Rolling Stones filmed a music video in Ottawa once.
Really?
And
which song?
Yeah, it was like when they were, you know, back 60, in the day. What, 70 now. It was only like 10, 15 years ago, maybe. And it was for one of their newer songs. It was actually a good song.
Yeah.
But they're like walking down Bank Street and then like in the Byward Market playing a song. And I was just like, this is kind of weird to see this. It feels kind of relatable and cool. But for anybody who's watching from the outside who doesn't know Ottawa, they're like, okay, it's some generic town.
Yeah.
And I can like get into the song. For me, I was like totally lost into like just observing the background.
Hey, that's my sandwich shop. And like, hey, it's cool. Yeah, my favorite music video is you know, it's the one. It's so easy. It's that I forget which song it is. It's by U2. They go on the back of a truck and they're just driving through New York and they film though and people start going crazy. And so I was like, how cheap of that? Like no creativity whatsoever. But
there's a good one of U2 in Morocco.
Oh really?
You know that one where they cover up Morocco in sheets?
Oh,
I think it's like maybe it's Casablanca.
Is it? Okay. I gotta watch it. I remember growing up, like MTV, Much Music, which is our Canadian version of MTV. Like music videos are a huge thing. I don't know if they're still a big deal, if people really care about music videos anymore. I just listen to the music on YouTube. I don't really watch the videos anymore.
Well, yeah, I wonder because, you know, I listen to a lot of music on YouTube and it's usually going to the music video to get it.
Yeah.
But I'm not looking at the video.
Me too.
but then I think possibly we've outgrown it and maybe these kids are very much into it because there's still lots of production values going into these things.
And it's really interesting. If you ever go into like these like songs or their music videos on Wikipedia, they'll talk about like a lot of big directors started in the music video world. Like nowadays, if you look, and sometimes they go back too. So like well-known movie directors directed this music video or that music video, et cetera, et cetera. So there is an industry, I guess, for it. But like you, I don't watch it. I'll just put it in the background while I work and then I'll just listen to music.
I think it was definitely a big thing, like 80s and 90s, and it's kind of tapered off because like smartphones, you can like choose your own entertainment now, right? You don't have to be forced to watch this kind of stuff.
Yeah. I actually just, do you remember that song by Fatboy Slim, The Beats, so or whatever, like that famous one?
Was it the Christopher? There was one of Christopher Walken where he was dancing all over the place.
That one. I saw it yesterday for the first time in like 20 years. It was on YouTube.
What a guy.
And I was just thinking like it kind of went back to my youth. But yeah. Anyways, that's sort of my thing. And so like I was just going to say that like I am fascinated by this place. I'm fascinated by all the places that I've been to. And I will keep going to these places. And like maybe I'll just build one inside my backyard one day. Or these guys who build their, you know, their wives give them their basements and they're like, yeah, just leave me alone. Go just do whatever you want.
Send them down there. Yeah.
And they spent 20 years. Actually, I read that Phil Collins, the musician, is a huge model train enthusiast. He's got this huge buildup in one of his houses that he's been working on for like, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. And it functions really well. So it's definitely one of those hobbies where like it's time consuming. And it's definitely like you can go down into the basement and like lose yourself in the world from the world if you're doing
but it. I can understand that one. One thing I don't understand is train spotters and plane spotters.
What do they do? I don't know. I don't explain it to me.
Well, I don't know if I can. They're just super obsessed with like the models of the trains and the types of trains they see. And same thing with planes. Like even in Ottawa, which is not the most exciting airport, and that doesn't really have the busiest amount of air traffic, there's a dedicated group of plane spotters, and they just sit out there with their binoculars and they take notes and they write
like,
down.
Like, oh, that's a 747 or that's an
Airbus. Yeah. But it does nothing for me. I mean, I can understand like working on something and you built it, you feel a sense of pride and watch it go around and maybe talk about it a little bit. But
Did you ever do any models growing up? Cars, trains, planes, anything build yourself? No?
Nothing on that scale. I mean, I played like most kids with Lego and Playmobil, but I never reached those great heights.
Did you ever play Microsoft Flight Simulator when growing up?
No, I did the City.
SimCity. That's cool.
And that was great because you could put in like hurricanes and like earthquakes and destroy towns and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Actually, by the way, speaking of SimCity, I think I haven't done it in like, of course, like a decade plus, but it started getting better and better, you know, as technology improved. Because I remember the first one was like some horrible, like bird's point of view, like slow. But then as it went out, it started becoming 3D and you could build bigger towers. You could go online and get the cheat code so you could get like more money to build or build faster. But those, I think stuff like that was like, it's really creative and it's somewhat beneficial for kids, at least. I know it's not the
Like
greatest
Grand Theft
experience.
Auto, you know, where you can shoot everybody and run them over. But they
Yeah.
created huge worlds for that as well.
Yeah, definitely. I remember playing Grand Theft Auto and like just driving through the city with no speed limit because I was breaking the law, but like you could see the city, and it's cool. Like,
Should just to interrupt, one of our other guests, Mr. Steve, he was one of the most entertaining people to watch play Grand Theft Auto because he followed the traffic laws. I don't know what it was like with you guys, but like it would be like me, Steve, Jesse, or you know, we'll make some friends, and we take turns. And when someone dies or gets arrested by the cops, they have to hand over the controller.
Yeah.
Steve would never do anything wrong. He'd stop at the stop sign, indicate, turn right.
He might get a
Yeah,
ticket if you don't.
he never went fast.
I don't. Do you remember pre Grand Theft Auto? There was a game called Need for Speed, and there was like a number of them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I remember before we had like Macs and like technology, like fast internet and stuff, we had old computers. And I remember the coolest technology growing up was that you could buy, instead of using your keyboard and mouse, you could buy a wheel and accelerator and attach it into
Yeah,
your computer.
I
And
never got one of those.
I had it for Need for Speed, but I didn't know how to drive. Like, I mean, I guess I knew technology like on the computer how to drive, but not in real life. But it was the reactivity time was always off. You know what I'm talking about? It wasn't like real driving. You'd push and the car would be like, and so you try to run away from the cops and you try to speed them. And then when the cops pulled you over, they'd be like, you've been arrested or something like that. But hours and hours spent on this useless garbage.
So many wasted nights.
So many. But yeah, I hope one day we can check out the Hamburg one. Wait for me. We'll go
Well, that's
together.
great, Tosh. Thanks for letting me. I didn't even know it existed, so this is very illuminating.
It's the mo There's only like six things in the world I really care about, and this is one of them. So
That should be one of the wonders of the world at this point, like this creation of the worlds.
I'd love to talk to you know what the cool thing is, like, because like when you're sitting at the table with these, when they're like, when the company of the people are sitting together, there's like a number of people from different departments, right? There's tourism and there's engineering and there's artists and there's business. And so they it's so cool to think that they'd be like, okay, you know what, let's David Lewis and Toshiro Raman told us to do Canada, let's think about adding a Canada section. So what are we going to do, what are we going to like add? Okay, you go to Canada on like a research trip, you get photos. And so it's like A to Z, like the whole thing is like just manufactured. And like, how are we going to make the hockey rink, like you said, like realistic? Which players are we going to put on there? Like Tim Hortons
Why don't we
donut.
make one for Canada? Like, let's go to Canada. Well, you're in Canada, but let's go and make one of these things. It would be huge.
Have you ever made a model of anything in school or?
I usually partnered up with people who are better at it, and
I did two models and it was the coolest one. In grade 7, we did medieval history, so I made a castle. So we built a castle with shrubs and everything, and it's I know it didn't technology it didn't have any technology, it didn't do anything mechanical, but it was pretty cool. But the coolest one was I did a science project with the smartest kid in the class, my friend
Nice.
Andy, and we replicated what a comet is like. So we went to go buy dry ice, our parents went because they didn't sell it to us. Right, and they bought it, and like it was so much fun, Dave. We spent hours and hours just like doing fun things with dry ice because it would dry ice teams or it has like coming off. So stuff like this, really, there's an educational value, Dave. I would argue there's definitely a value,
There's education there somewhere.
definitely. Anyways, man,
Awesome. Thanks, Tosh.
you're welcome. Have a great day. Thanks to our listeners. Tell us if there's a cool little miniature world in your town and how your interactions
Yes,
has
let
been.
us know.
Send pictures and I'll post everything so you guys can see videos and links and this and that. It's just a cool, fun thing. And I think it brings a lot of joy, especially now in the world when we need it the most. So
We need joy.
we need joy. All right, man. Take care of yourself.
Over and out.
Over and out.